At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. They say that opposites attract, and that's never so true as when a kind person runs into a total piece of shit. It's tough to watch, like a nature show when this happens. It's like when the crocodile rips a baby hippo from bath time, or when a hyena rips a wildebeest's guts out from its asshole in full gallop. But often, that's the way it is, isn't it? When kindness meets meanness. The easygoing are looking to chill while the high-strung are out to kill. Here's what I'm trying to say. Here's the problem. I'll put it as abstractly as I possibly can. When you let somebody across your boundary, the boundary then gets set wherever they want it to be. And when you finally resist in the form of exiting the entire relationship because you're being swallowed by it, that wolf you let into your hen house is going to start tearing everything to shreds. So what do we do? Do we have to start being rude to people who are too pushy as kind people to mean people? Yes, of course we do. Because to be kind is an invitation. And you never know what it is that you're opening your door to. At the very least, a pain in the ass that will steal your time and make you sick. And at the very worst, a dead-eyed psychopath. Like Albert Flick. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. A bad old man. July 15th, 2018. 9:30 a.m. Lewiston, Maine. It's a sunny morning on a shady street, if you know what I mean. There's a library, a homeless shelter, a coin-op laundry, probably the smell of old grease washing chicken balls wafting from some young guy's ancient Chinese restaurant. And this is my kind of street. Everybody outside, because there's no air conditioning or because they're homeless. People being good to one another as a result of last night having gone so poorly. They're raw. They want things to start off on the right foot. Fuck, that was messed up last night. Let's get over it. Everybody has their first hit in them. Whether that be a beer or a shot of heroin. And for the moment, in the morning in these places, everything is cool. But if you look closer, there is strangeness afoot. Even Sesame Street has its stains on the sidewalk. And this picture I paint of a hungover little side street in the haven of the hood is yellowing as the old man of this story totters into frame. And I know these places, and it's why I'm speaking so fondly of them. I used to work in a place, and it was a homeless shelter. The guy that I worked with, I was a co-op student when I was in college. He was in his early 30s, and I was 21 years old. And he took me on as a student, and he said he rarely does. But when I met him, I guess he liked me, and and he brought me in immediately. And he took me out for the day and many days, but on this first day, we go out and we're walking the neighborhood, and all the homeless guys there, they're trying to get placed into these halfway houses all around the block. And all these homes where these guys could end up staying, get off the streets to go to there if they earn that. All these homes had artificial turf on their porches. So you could spot them when you're driving around and you're going to check in. And they can find their way home, I guess, or the cops know where they're at or whatever. The artificial turfed porches are where the criminals are at or the transitioning homeless are at. Mike and I went around that day, and he said that I kind of made the cut, and I became a student of his. And for the next 6 months, I worked in this homeless shelter under the tutelage of Michael. A hell of a guy. He had a short long, you know, a mullet, they call it, but at the time, short long, a greasy short long. He always had trouble with women. There was these girls that we were working with, but he was, you know, that he had been in all these relationships with, and there was all these fucking problems for him all the time. I believe he was coked up half the time. Yeah, so was I, although I couldn't afford it, but when I could, I would get it. And I remember one day us walking past a bunch of guys who were by the shelter, and they were smoking weed and probably. They were smoking crack. And we walk up, we start talking to them, and they're like, hey, hit this, Mike. And Mike looks at me, he goes, what do you think? And I go, oh, go ahead. He goes, well, what do you think? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I should hit it. He's like, yeah, if you want to. So I hit a joint, and he smoked some of the joint too. And we walk away. We go back into our little office, and we're sitting there all fucked up and high and joking around, and he's telling me stories and all that. Anyways, all this to say that I do know these neighborhoods, and that's why I'm describing them in such as much detail as I possibly can heading into this story. But I want to say about Michael D. when I was in college that he came to my graduation from the co-op program. And I didn't think he would, but he did. And he showed up and he spoke about me. And he said that Jack is a street smart kid. He's also a street dumb kid, just like me. And I had a really good time hanging out with him. And I asked him later what he meant by street dumb. He said, well, you remember that day when we went and smoked all that weed with those guys? You have to be street dumb. You have to be willing to get right into the streets. You have to be dumb to get involved in this. You have to make stupid decisions in order to enter the realm of these people, in order to be able to gain their trust. And that day that we smoked that weed with those guys, you gained their trust, and that's why you did so well, and that's why, you know, I'm with a proposing for you to work here and all that. And I ended up working there too as a street dumb guy. But anyways, moving on. Let's meet Albert Flick. He's in this neighborhood here in Lexington. Where the fuck are we again? Lewiston, Maine. And he's a 77-year-old ex-con living in his days here like Brooks Hatlin from Shawshank Redemption. And it's too bad that Flick has stay busy living here rather than getting busy dying somewhere else like old Brooks had. Though I suppose you need a conscience and a heavy one at that to kill yourself. You will hear a lot of derogatory description when it comes to old Albert Flick listening to other podcasts or reading articles about it. We have a tendency as podcasters or as journalists who are out there, people writing articles, whatever, people doing YouTube channels, to shit on the appearance of criminals. But you won't hear that here, as I've been doing some soul searching and I've realized that to tear down anyone, even a guy like Albert Flick, for their appearance, that's low. People can't help the way they look. Simple as that. And for me to go on about how Flick has a face like an open can of tuna or a shriveled elephant's nutsack would alienate the aged section of my audience. And I'm better than that. So I just wanted to lay that down there. Anyways, there is strangeness afoot in this little shitty neighborhood. Old man Flick, having moved in with his nephew after his latest prison release, but it hasn't taken him long to become a fixture of the neighborhood. Flick will take a lunch from the shelter at times and a book from the library once in a while, but as of late, He's been focused on taking 48-year-old Kimberly Dobby's time and her peace of mind. Flick, despite his old age and harmless appearance, is extremely dangerous, as Kimberly, a kind, red-headed, sprightly woman, recently fallen on hard times, is about to find out the hard way. It is now 9:32 a.m., July 15th of 2018, a sunny day on a shady street in Lewiston, Maine, and I repeat myself as Albert Flick prepares to do the same. He is focused on Kimberly Dobby as he slowly strolls into frame, hands behind his back, clutching something shiny. Kimberly is sitting out front of the laundromat. Laundromats always exist in place like this. She's talking on her phone. She's excited because there is hope that she and her twin 11-year-old boys are soon going to be leaving the shelter. It's a sad situation, but she's on top of it. She's got an apartment that's going to become available that she's immediately become the top prospect for. And with assistance through Hope Haven Mission, it looks like the former school teacher is about to turn things around. This is the way it works in these places once again. See, if you show like high potential, if you show that you're not all fucked up on drugs and that you're just like a dude who's gonna fuck it up when they get into this housing unit, they're not gonna give it to you. But if you show that, you know, you've got real potential and in the meetings they have with you, that you really want to turn things around, they're going to give you that opportunity. And she is one of these people. The situation, you know, one like Kimberly's is the beating heart of the social service system. Sure, the social services system is great for scraping the mentally ill and homeless together a meal and a bus ticket, maybe a cot and some chump change for smokes. But when it can get a desperate middle-aged mother of two with an education and a spirit still shining and willing to get things right after surviving maybe an abusive relationship or a scrape with the law or drugs or booze or all the above, that social services system will come to life for you. There is something about Kimberly Dobby that in her short time at the shelter with her twin boys has improved the lives of those rooting for her. She's friendly, intelligent, funny, energetic, and far too nice for her own good. Everybody's rooting for her. The workers are, the other, inmates, the other people staying at the shelter, they're all rooting for her. She's uplifting everybody. She's just kind of like a flash in the pan. This is just a little side road for her. And the fact that she's shown up there and so humbly and with such positivity has really turned this shelter into a cheering section for Kimberly and her kids. Albert Flick, the 77-year-old stumbling around this neighborhood, he is closing in on Kimberly. It's 9:33 a.m. now, on a sunny morning of a shady street. He's been Kimberly's shadow for weeks now, always lingering around her. Other women at the shelter have noticed this. They've told Kim she needs to tell Albert to fuck off. He's making her kids nervous, making her nervous. But Albert had bought them Dunkin' Donuts one day. He'd been a donut maker himself once, don't you know? A long, long time ago. And Kimberly felt there was no harm in him following them around for the short stint they'd be there. She was just kind of humoring him. And though she no longer leads him on with his strange flirting, which she did at the start, you know, many old men flirt, but there's very few that believe that it could go somewhere, that actually go somewhere, as a 77-year-old to a 48-year-old with two twin boys. But she gets this sense that this guy's a little off, that he does think it could go somewhere. So she cuts off the strange little flirts that were going on in the beginning. Though she doesn't come off completely. As I was saying, there are a few old men who, well, there are many old men, creepy old men, but there are a few of those creepy old men that actually think that they got a shot with these younger women that they hit on. There's so few that are so mature and full of enough piss and vinegar still to stalk and destroy those who would dare dismiss them. Albert Flick, though, is an anomaly in this sense. Born in the early 40s, he'd grown up rough and abused. He joined the army at age 18, but was soon given a hardship discharge and returned home to be with family. Presumably, there'd been an issue with someone's health or a financial emergency that required Albert to help out, to return, so that the family would not fall to ruin back then. This is when Albert Flick becomes a donut maker It's a job that he'll hold for many years, wherein he eventually marries and continues making donuts until 1979, when his 35-year-old wife Sandra surprises Albert by having the police show up to their apartment so that she could safely hand him the papers for divorce. Albert is then escorted to the street back then. Clearly, he had been an abusive husband, and I can't say for certain that this is fact, as the information is scant, but in my experience, if you need to have armed men around you when confronting your husband about leaving him, you're probably concerned he's going to kill you for it. And it turns out Sandra had been wise to involve police, but they couldn't stay at the Westbrook Main apartment forever. A few weeks later, in late January of 1979, 37-year-old Albert Fleck back then parks 3/4 mile from the old apartment, rummages through his glove box to retrieve a 3-inch jackknife, leaving behind his gun, and heads to his ex-wife's house now to get some satisfaction. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar, our exclusive snack and hydration sponsor here at Dark Topic. And we're so excited to announce they've teamed up with Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, on 2 special edition products, a salted caramel chip protein bar and a yuzu mango hydration mix drink. And I've been eating a whole hell of a lot of salted caramel chip protein bars. I don't get sick of them. That's one thing I'll say about those. It's a great treat and decent for you, as well as the yuzu mango hydration mix drink. I mean, I'll have one before bed. I'll have one when I wake up in the morning. Something about it. I mean, really great flavor and makes me feel like I came back to life after I chug one of those bad boys. IQ Bar's plant protein bars, they're mixed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit. The salted caramel chip IQ Bar that I just mentioned there, it has 12 grams of protein and only 1 gram of sugar, and it has brain-boosting nutrients in it like lion's mane, adaptogen. The Yuzu Mango IQ Mix is a refreshing zero-sugar hydration mix that marries bold flavor and essential electrolytes for your body and lion's mane plus magnesium for your brain. Just mix with water for Michelin star taste and next level hydration. 10% of sales, I should mention, go to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, which supports the next generation of aspiring U.S. chefs. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ bars, brain boost. Clearly, I didn't drink my yuzu drink this morning. Brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. This is the snack that you should start stocking in your cupboards when you go to reach for that, you know, ice cream at night, that chocolate bar during the day. I'd suggest reach for an IQ bar. They sent me the salted caramel chip IQ bar, the yuzu mango mix. And I mean, again, I've been going back and forth on those and I just can't believe that something so delicious could be so good for me. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% of all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text DARK to 64,000. Text DARK to the number 64,000. That's DARK to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Could this be your summer of discovery? Yeah, with Rosetta Stone, it could be. Whether you're traveling abroad, planning a staycation, or just shaking up your routine, what better time to dive into a new language? With Rosetta Stone, you can turn downtime into meaningful progress. Rosetta Stone is a trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb and retain your new language on desktop or mobile, whenever and wherever it fits your summer schedule. I've been using it to try to learn Japanese, as I mentioned already multiple times. I mean, Rosetta Stone and I are good friends at this point, and I'm surprised how quickly you can pick things up in bite-sized lessons. And what I mean by that is, like, if you're planning on going somewhere or interacting with someone who has another language underneath their belt or a country that is required to speak that language wherever you are in certain situations, you can pick up bite-sized things to get you by. And I really like that about it. And it makes you feel like you are learning when you haven't developed the entire scope of it. At least you have a foot in the door with these bite-sized lessons and learning with their true accent feature. Rosetta Stone is the trusted language expert. It has 30 years of experience teaching people. I mean, there's millions of users and 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. Rosetta Stone is the go-to tool for real language growth. And you can learn faster, retain longer. The big thing with Rosetta Stone for me is that you get this lifetime membership with them when you sign on, and you just never know when it's going to come in handy. Whatever trip comes up in the future, you can prepare yourself with this in your back pocket. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential right now. Dark Topic listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. Sandra isn't surprised to see him. She's spoken to Albert and the police to get rid of him a few times since the split. He keeps on hovering around, keeps on showing up, keeps on threatening things at the window at night. But this time around, Albert is expected. He's here to pick up some belongings, most importantly, his fishing poles. Sandra had a 12-year-old daughter from a previous marriage, and it is through her eyes that we'll watch what comes next. Peeking through the crack of her slightly open bedroom door, it's difficult to not come out and protect in some way, but Mother had told her to stay here until Albert had left, so here we stay in the back room, peeking in on the situation. Everything seems to be going okay, there's no yelling yet. Albert seems sober and in control of himself. He's showing this young girl's mom how to cut a hook off the line of his fishing pole, which is strange. Like, who gives a fuck? Who cares? It's not like this is his first date with the girl's mom, and they're going to go rent a canoe and kiss a guy a lake, rekindle what never really was in the first place. You know, why won't he leave? God, what a jerk. It's okay. You can say it, girl. What an asshole. He proves it in this moment, as she thinks it, I'm sure. Albert grabs the girl's mom by the arm, twists it behind her back, and shoves her into a chair. Then he straddles her and begins plunging the knife rapidly into this 12-year-old's mother. And this 12-year-old girl we're on board with can't stay hidden any longer. She escapes the room, rushes past her screaming mother, a mother screaming this daughter's name as she passes. And Albert Flick, on her, grunting and stabbing and lost in his bloody rage, continues plunging in that knife. We are out in the hallway and down the stairs. We are banging on a door and begging for help. He's killing my mom. Who? Albert, upstairs. He's stabbing her in her chair. Please help. And the man from the apartment is rushing upstairs now. Then Albert is pounding back down and out the front door. He was wild-eyed and covered in blood. What did he do to Mom? And Sandra upstairs, she's dying. A dozen or so bleeding holes in her blouse. She manages to whisper that Albert has done it. That Albert has done her in. As she passes away. This is the violent past of Albert Flick. The old man approaching on the sunny street in the shady neighborhood 2018. Approaching another mother with two 11-year-old twins playing close by. Kids that Albert hates as they're keeping Kim from being his. And like with Sandra way back in 79, if he can't have Kim in 2018, nobody will. He shouldn't be here. He should still be incarcerated. But Albert Flick had been released 25 years or so after the murder of his soon-to-be ex-wife. He'd been released at the age of 62, then had reoffended, stabbing another woman who dared to reject him in 2007 in his late 60s, stabbing her with a fork and beating her about the head until help intervened. He would serve a couple more years for this, then be released again, only to attack another woman in 2010, this time with a screwdriver. And can you believe this shit? But he's getting damn old and can't manage to get a fatal stab in with the screwdriver. He's 70 at this point, and when police respond, they find him trying to hang himself from a fire escape, but he's put in cuffs before he can jump with a rope half over his face. His beautiful, nutsack face. And what to do with an animal like Albert Flick? What to do when he's up for sentencing? Well, the judge doesn't see any reason to keep him too long. He's, quote, aging out. This is the thought. Let's give him another handful of years, the judge says. You know, what do you think? 4, 5 more years? Let's get him to his mid to late 70s. then give him one more shot, how about? You know, he won't do any harm in his mid-70s. Here's Judge Robert Crowley justifying the short sentence he's about to hand down to Flick after all this shit that happened in 2007, 2010. All this shit that they call, what do they call it? Recidivism.
There's absolutely nothing in Mr. Flick's past history that suggests that he is going to choose to abandon his behaviors of assaultive conduct toward women. However, from his appearance and the fact of the date of his birth, he will be 72 or 73 when released from the probation revocation. And at some point, Mr. Flick is going to age out of his capacity to engage in this conduct, and incarcerating him beyond the time that he ages out doesn't seem to me to make good sense from a criminological or fiscal perspective.
And to be fair to Judge Robert Crowley, who retired shortly after this sentence, the stats were in his favor. They were on his side. You know, a 72, 73-year-old man normally doesn't continue with this behavior, but we're not dealing with a normal 72, 73-year-old man by the time he gets out. Flick is released, as promised, by 2014, and immediately he returns to prison after threatening the woman he'd attacked with the screwdriver, telling the woman, quote, "You're gonna get yours." It's two more years for this breach probation, and it's thought that certainly this so-called aging out has to be kicking in by now when Flick is released again to eventually find himself approaching his newest love interest, his latest source of scorn, at 9:34 a.m. of July 15th, 2018, in Lewiston, Maine. Kimberly Dobby continues with her phone call. Her 11-year-old twin boys are playing close by as a shadow blocks the sun on the shady street. Her shadow, as the girls from the shelter had dubbed Flick. Kimberly ignores Flick, who had recently been behaving as though he might come with her to the new apartment, saying he'd get a truck for their stuff. I don't know how he'd get it. Going on like they were together and had a life ahead of them, raising her twin boys together that he hated so much. To Kimberly Dobby, Flick is just a sad, delusional old man in the neighborhood that would be out of her life in a few days, and if he wanted to hang around like a little puppy until then, so be it. She's a kind woman, he's a mean man, she doesn't realize how fucking mean, but she's just kind of putting up this so-called shadow around her and her kids. Her kids are very nervous around this old man. I mean, they're always looking around corners and stuff for him, and he's always there. It's said that he's constantly surveilling her in the weeks that she's staying at this shelter. Flick, as we now know, is anything but harmless, and he proves it when at 9:35 a.m. of July 15th, 2018, a date and time in the top corner of the surveillance footage I've gleaned much of this from and that you can find in the show notes, Flick produces the pink-handled shears that he'd bought from a local Walmart and begins brutally stabbing Kimberly Dobby as she sits on the window ledge of the laundry. She screams into the phone. Her children stop their horseplay and turn to witness their mother's murder. And Albert Flick manages, at age 77, to plunge 11 holes into the last woman who will ever wrong him before a witness swoops in and flicks Flick away with a drop kick. Flicks him away from Kimberly Dobby's corpse. Now how about that for aging out? Not bad for an old man. Well, come on, that's really bad. But what do you expect from a bad old man? And that'll do it. Hey, the last time... Well, first, let me say this. Old men like this. I worked with half a dozen of them. As a male in the social services field, as a young man, I was assigned to a lot of old men. Whether that be in nursing homes or in... what was it when I had to go to fucking houses? What do they call it? Hospice care. They would assign me to houses with, like, creepy old men because they didn't want women to have to deal with them, so they'd have complaints about them and all that. And I dealt with a lot of creepy old men. And this type of guy isn't really foreign to me, although the aspect of him just continuously being this runaway train of latching onto women, getting jealous about the shit, almost setting up the jealousy. I mean, how could he possibly think that he can have a chance with a 48-year-old woman with twin boys who's intelligent and, you know, loved by everybody in the neighborhood? How could a 77-year-old man think he had a shot? It's almost like he's setting himself up for rejection to get the opportunity to feel the anger and then to unleash the anger. It's like he's addicted to vengeance. I never really dealt with that. But I certainly dealt with a lot of bitter old men and who would say a lot of dangerous things about the girls in the apartment that they lived in, the girls that had worked there before where I was at, trying to have weird sexual conversations about it. I've worked in nursing homes with, like, Alzheimer's patients or just regular old dying men who are so creepy towards the women there, and it's usually laughed off. Or at least then it was. I don't know what the world's like now when it comes to that. But I always felt like, wow, you fucking lived your whole life. You were a married man, you had kids, many of them. And now you're going to end this life? You're going to fucking put the cherry on top of your life by grabbing 22-year-old girls' asses and making weird fucking comments and shit? And they're all like, oh, he's harmless, you know, he's on his way out, you can give him a break. It's like, I don't know. If he was a truly good man, this wouldn't be happening. He would treat you like a granddaughter. Why is he treating you like a sex object? And why are there so many of them? Almost every fucking old man that I dealt with was a piece of shit. But to be fair, that was why I was there. It was to deal with these old piece of shit men. So I might be a little, my view on that might be a little skewed. Anyways, the last time that I spoke to you guys at the end of an episode, some people fucking reached out to me and said that I was saying that crack cocaine is good. I was talking about addiction and how I like nicotine, and I said why I like crack cocaine, because it solves some of my problems. And people are like, it causes a lot of problems. Like, no fucking shit. Like, do I have to, like, explain everything after I say it? Just so you know, crack's bad, okay? There's somebody listening right now like, oh shit, you told me it was good. They just put the crack pipe down. You're welcome. I just fixed your life. Hey, crack cocaine's bad for you. Just so you know. Some of these people would reach out and they're like, you have a responsibility to your audience. You have a responsibility. People are listening. They'll listen to you. It's like, they're adults. Who gives a fuck? There's people talking to them on the street. There's people, I'm not a journalist. I'm a real person. Speaking into a podcast mic. I love podcasting, listening to certain podcasts for this, that they don't have a boss and they don't have somebody telling them like, oh, you might not want to say that. I like hearing people make mistakes. I like hearing people be honest and real. And I strive to be that myself. So, you know, if you don't fucking, if it gets your panties in a bunch, me not rounding out every fucking thought I have, then fuck off, I guess, right? But I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/darktopic if you want more. Something I've been working on lately is that being positive really counts, despite the way I was just behaving. I tried to say it earlier, but a lot of people were making fun of the way this guy looks. And it's like, oh, you just fucking have at him because he's a piece of shit. And I had my way with him. I called him an open can of tuna, I think. And I said, this face looks like shriveled nutsack or whatever. But really, it's low blows, man. And I think I've done a lot of that in the past, and I sincerely apologize for that to myself in the future if I'm listening back to it, to you, to me, to to the way I'm presenting myself, because I'm not like that, and it's a very weak way to do things. In real life, I would never insult somebody about their looks. I really wouldn't. It's really low fucking hanging fruit. And what you should do is tear people down if you're going to, about their behavior. So I wanted to say that. And other than that, I hope that Mike was listening, because I'd really like to reconnect with that guy. We had some good time. We sure did. And I gotta cut in here. This is recorded afterwards. I did reach out to Mike from the shelter that I worked at. And throughout this episode, you'll hear some weird cuts. And it's because he requested that I do not say his last name. So we did reconnect, me and the guy from the shelter. But he didn't want me to say his last name, which I understand. I'm fucking stupid for even saying it. I thought he was dead. He's not. So that's a good thing. Way to go, Mike. I hope the world is still this way, where in the low-down, dirty situations that occur, that people, you know, who comment on them and say that there should be a certain way that it should be navigated, not being in the situation, are left out of it. And the people who are in it deal with it as it comes. I hope that's still the same way that it is. I hope that's still the same way as is in shelters. I hope that's the way it is in, you know, group homes, in prisons. I'm sure it is. And to those who work in those fields, I just want to say, no matter how you fucking handle that, God bless you for even being there, okay? God bless you for even fucking being there. These people who judge you and however the way you fucking deal with it, they have no idea what it's like down there. So, God bless you. All right? And if you've been doing it wrong, tomorrow's another day. And try to take some of the edge off by, I don't know, smoking crack with them. So, I need to do some shout-outs here real quick from the high-level tier of Patreon. Thank you, Heather Gallagher. Thank you so much, Heather. I think you've been here before and you're back. Thank you, Heather. And Manuel Salazar. Thank you so much, Manuel, for your high-level support on Patreon there. I was talking about the bar that burned down, and I had a buddy of mine show up today, and he asked me to do some ice making. When I first came to this town, I was the ice man. I got a job doing the curling rink as a pebbler. You got to throw down this water through like a shower nozzle, and it puts little pebbles of water onto the ice, and that's what helps the rock in curling to slide across the ice as it does. And to scrape, you have to scrape a certain way so that it makes each lane kind of unique, and they get to know the lay of the land with it. It's an interesting trade that I didn't stick with because I was getting too drunk and I was going to kill myself. No, it gets boring after, not boring, sorry. It just fucking sucks after a year. But I had a good time for that year that I did it. And they want me to come back and do some ice making for some Bond spiels, if you know what those are, coming up. So I might do that. I'm getting back to playing a little bit of pool and getting involved in the Legion a little bit more now that the bar's gone. And it's kind of been a weird blessing that I'm getting more involved with the guys over the Legion, because if you know about small towns, if you're a small town, if you live in one is anything like mine, the bar is where all the dregs kind of go, and I was getting in some trouble there, and I had a lot of great times there. But at the Legion, there's the older folks, and you play snooker rather than pool, and you talk about things like your career rather than your ability to go find cocaine, and it's been real good for me. So maybe I'll get into some ice making coming up. Other than that, what the fuck else am I going to ramble about? How about, can you please give me a review for Dark Topic? It does help with my visibility. I don't have really the greatest visibility since I left Dark Topic last time, got involved with all the other stuff, and then I've come back. I'm kind of struggling with my visibility. So if you haven't left a review, please leave whatever fucking review you want to leave. It all helps. And that'll do it. Until next time, I hope you're all well. And I'll be back as soon as I possibly can. I have big things happening behind the scenes that I don't really want to like fucking promise or announce because, you know, I break a lot of promises. But things are looking really up, and it looks like I'm going to have a lot more time to do this. So I hope to see you real soon. And thanks once again for tuning in. Until next time, keep those eyes cocked, those doors locked, and stay paranoid. Thank you so much.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.